I hope you're going to enjoy it. We have a guest, Michelle Frances Stoica, teacher, artist, occupier, in the studio with us. Also chiming in will be Mr. D.A.M., Mr. Mitchell, and me, Coral Reefs. Our call number is 831-469-3119. We're going to be just discussing lots of topics that have been coming up in Santa Cruz and worldwide that matter to us, and the aspect of what culture is turning itself and all of us over and over and over again, and all the possible ways that our planet is dealing with this, and we as a people, how we're changing and how we're being changed. So welcome, Michelle.
Thanks, Coral. It's a lovely opening there.
Well, I'm going to try to have a conversation with you as eye to eye, but as you know, being in the studio up with these microphones in our mouths almost, but it can be kind of a fun time, festive. It's the last show of 2011. That means that we're going to be looking at what could possibly happen in 2012, and will that matter to anyone? And how do you feel about any changes that might be happening? Or what would you like to start out referring to?
All right. Well, I think that for the most part, the last 3 months of my life have had an enormous impact on me. I have tried to balance work and my spiritual path and occupy and my art, and in that process there's just been a lot coming up, a lot of information, a lot of teachings. I feel a lot of guidance. I feel when I'm out about and around with people that we're all just being stimulated in incredible ways to grow and to open up and to become more people of heart. And I think that I was thinking about coming on to talk about the spirituality aspect and occupy, and then I fully realized, of course, I can't really speak for either one of those things, because in truth, both of those things are like writing my life right now. They are impacting me, changing me, causing me to grow, causing me to question my values and my courage and what matters in life. And in a sense, waking me up at a faster rate than I think I could have ever woken myself up at this point. So one of the things that has happened for me is really that I seem to be moving from story to story. And whether it's stories from indie media or on YouTube about Occupy, or going home and throwing open the wisdom literature and saying, what is going on here? You know, just explain this to me, God. I'm confused. I don't get it. I need clarity here. I just keep getting handed another story. So if it's okay, I'll just tell you the first story.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
It was an article about a 21-year-old man who was with the Occupy Frankfurt group. And, of course, they're out in the snow at that point. And someone came to talk to him and ask him, well, what are you here for? And what he told them was, I don't know if what we're doing here is actually going to take down the banks. But he said, I'm here because I want to help set a fire in the human people. These people, a big enough fire that they will stop accepting things just as they are. And when I heard that, it struck me that what fire is it that he's really talking about? And of course, it just went out into my heart that he was talking about that spiritual fire. You know, that fire of love, that passion that people can have for one another and for life, you know. And it seemed to me when I looked internally that after the war, the last war began, somehow that fire had died out. And somehow I had still kept walking around and talking, but that part of me that was really alive was no longer there. And so I had to look at what he said as, yes, you know, I can feel alive again. I do. I feel more alive again when I'm at the GA and when I'm doing things. There's something about an aliveness returning to my soul that has not been there. So that's that story.
Yeah. There were a lot of GAs in the past 3 months, meaning that since September 17th when Occupy Wall Street began, and then in early October when Occupy Santa Cruz began, every night there were general assemblies at the steps of the courthouse in Santa Cruz. And of those, of the last 3 months, you attended quite a few of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to go on with another story?
I do. I want to tell you a story from the Bhagavad Gita, and rather than read it, I'm going to paraphrase it. The text I use came from Yogananda, but it's the Bhagavad Gita is a story of a man that has to go to war. And in this case, it's a character, Arjuna, and he is asked to go to war against his relatives, people he's actually related to. Now, the way the text has been explained by Yogananda is that really all the people he's going to war with, their names represent some form of bad human characterization, like greed or need for power or control, you know, or anger or that, like that, okay. So when he is first questioned by Krishna, who says, you've got to go do this, you've got to fight this battle, and Arjuna says, you mean give up my sense of myself, you know, my power, my status in society, and that? He said, no. He said, I would rather beg. And so Krishna, being a really patient teacher, says, let's do this again. He said, you have two choices here. You can either go through the rest of your life and always be considered a coward for not standing up to everyone, or you can gain spiritual levels that you can't even imagine now, like high, high spiritual good levels. And he tells him, take a pick. And when I was reading that, I was thinking that was my question in life at this point too. You know, am I going to be a coward here, or am I going to step into the arena and just have enough trust to go with this? Because for me, you could look at that parable in the same two ways. You could say that the 1% represented people who had a lot of fear and anger and greed and selfishness, and that needed healing. But at the same time, for that to be healed, the people who are in the Occupy movement are actually teaching that we must heal that within ourselves first, that we have to get over that part of ourselves in order to make a difference. So I just think that that's amazing, that the two stories are related, at least in my mind. So that was that story.
And how are they connected in your mind, for example, those two stories?
Okay, that in order for us to become ourselves and the good people that we really intrinsically are, we have to let go of attachments. And attachments to our own sense of individuality need to go with that. The blessing is that outside of that, when you let go of it, you just become more. Like, the individuality is a limit, it's a prison. And say, for instance, I was looking through YouTube one night, and I'm looking at all these different countries in the world, and they're holding up signs, and I know that they say Occupy, but they say it in Japanese and Chinese and in German, and I'm looking at the faces of these people, and for the first time in my life, I experienced a sense of oneness with them. It was perfect. And maybe I could just say simply that, okay, well, they're in back of the same signs that I'm in back of, but it's a little bit different than that. The first time, it seems to me that all the walls fell down that were holding me from seeing the similarity of humanity. of us all being the same thing. And I've never had an experience like that before, and so it was quite powerful, and I'm glad I got it.
Is it correct to say that you're more in love with people after Occupy began, or is there any other attribution for that?
I would have to say that that's hitting it right on the nail head, that I do feel more love. And not only feel love, but just feel pride in human people for their ability to stand up and face those dangers, for their courage, for their conviction and their intent, good intent of heart, and for everything that is good inside of human people. It's like it's trying to stand up and say, we're here, this is what we are, you know, we are what we were created to be in this sense. And that's lovely.
And what other Occupy cities have you been in touch with, either from people you know personally or from reading or watching?
It's fairly easy to go through YouTube and indie media and connect up and read what's going on in the different cities. And I have gained some powerful insights into people, into what matters through that. I was on a website and an email site when Los Angeles went down. And it was very interesting that after reading it, all these different emails between people, I picked it up in the morning and I read this one email that so touched my heart. He had written, you know, what I chiefly need right now, and he was in the camp after everything, he goes, is a broom. Like, this whole, you know, like, the massacre had taken place, but when all was said and done, you just got to pick up and do the next most intelligent thing. And here's this man, like, I just need a broom here, you know. And so I really love that. I think a message from San Francisco that I really liked was they were saying, okay, so some of you may be scared to come down and participate in Occupy, and of course rightfully so. And they said, that's okay. There are ways to participate in you won't beat up, you won't get thrown in jail. And then after that, the guy said, well, but however, if you don't mind going to jail, just make sure that you write the lawyer's phone number on your left arm before you come down. And it's just the people and the spirit. And I think one of my more favorite ones was an article was talking about how now that with the new law that we've completely lost all of our rights as far as the Constitution goes. So at the end of his letter, he's writing, all right, well, you're going to have to expect FEMA camps and gas chambers and federal prisons. And his last line was, see you there. And I think to myself, how could God not love us? I mean, in some senses, the bravery is just the great part of the human spirit. And I keep seeing it rise up over and over again. And of course, the photograph of the priest in his purple robes climbing over the fence at the Trinity Church, that was big for me. So,
yeah, purple robe and at the church. Oh, yeah. What did I read about someone who is a... Oh, yes, I was listening to a story today about a Methodist minister whose whole belief system was changed by a one of his you know, members of the congregation that he had known for 3 years. As on one level, he knew him to be a gay person. And then when this person, I guess it was a guy, decided to leave the church, Methodist church, because he totally felt like that there was no understanding of him as a person, this minister realized that we are our relationships. So just to think that this person, okay, I'll accept that he has, you know, he has this tendency to like men or like women or, you know, get be gay. But to not accept that they have a mate or a partner is just denying them their humanity. And so that's why this guy thought it was hypocritic for him. So he wanted to leave the church. So this minister changed his whole outlook of what it means for relationships, because people are their relationships. You know, you have to accept everything that they are, because how could you say that, oh, well, it's okay, you're gay and you're living with another gay person, you know, maybe of the opposite sex. It's okay, both of you are. We'll just look the other way. But if you have an intimate relationship with them, how could you sit, you know, say that's morally wrong for a person when, you know, it's his humanity that moved this minister. So whatever took up my mind over right then, I don't know, but this, you reminded me of this.
Yeah, well, I think that it's time that our humanity takes over everything, you know, that our humanity occupies everything. Because people are the gift. And I remember when I saw the picture from Occupy Oakland of the occupier standing on top of that freight container, right?
Yes, and I was there. I remember.
Yeah, you were there. Go, girl. And I looked at that for the longest time, and then I had been praying that night because I was a little concerned with the next, you know, things that were happening, that people would get hurt. And so I woke up in the morning, and I'd had this dream. And in the dream, I was standing in the crowd in Occupy Oakland, and this woman was showing me the poster, and she said, "See this? See this?" She goes, "This is the Christmas we have been waiting for 2,000 years. This is a time when people mean more than things."
Yeah.
Yeah. And I came up out of that dream, I was like, oh my God, that's what I got for Christmas this year. That was just such an amazing feeling that someone could create that. And that, yeah, it's about time that people meant more than things. And because it's still actually a lot more fun that way. Life is more enjoyable that way, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And I know that in some cultures, at the end of the calendar year is when the Christian Christmas is held, is honored and commemorated. In the Asian culture, it's a time when they pay all their bills and they don't need to go spend a bunch of money on people. They want to start the new year. They want to pay their bills and start their new year. Their way.
Yeah.
Away. So Chinese New Year is what is happy for them.
Yeah.
So I would think that they're very much a community in that regard, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it's religious, not religious, but it's a community of humanity. And how does religion and Occupy disagree or agree on the worldview?
Well, it's really interesting that one afternoon after seeing videos and going through something, I threw open the Bible. I was like, you, meaning, you know, the Great Spirit or whoever, has got to explain this to me because I'm confused. And I came across this passage, and I'll go ahead with your permission and read it, hopefully.
All right.
Okay. And it is from Ezekiel 34, and it says, God's message came to me, son of man, prophesy against the shepherd leaders of Israel, meaning, of course, the political leaders. Yes, prophesy, tell those shepherds, God the Master said, doom to you shepherds of Israel, feeding your own mouths. Aren't shepherds supposed to feed sheep? You drink the milk, you make clothes from the wool, you roast the lambs, but you don't feed the sheep. You don't build up the weak ones, don't heal the sick, don't doctor the injured, don't go after the strays, and don't look for the lost. You bully and badger them. And now they're scattered every which way because there was no shepherd. Scattered and easy pickings for wolves and coyotes. Scattered my sheep, exposed and vulnerable across mountains and hills, my sheep, scattered all over the world and no one looking out for them. Therefore, shepherds, listen to the message of God. As sure as I am the living God, decree of God the Master, because my sheep have been turned into mere prey, into easy meals for wolves, because you shepherds ignore them and only fed yourselves. Listen to what God says. Watch out. I'm coming down on the shepherds and taking my sheep back. You're fired as shepherds of my sheep. So I think that when I read that, I think to myself, it's not like we haven't gone through this before. But I think that the message is that we're going through it again, and we're trying to go through it in a stronger and better way. And so I think that's where I'm to see the connection, at least from a Christian perspective. God didn't just zap those people with electricity, you know, lightning. He used the natural forces that existed around that area, but he did indeed take them down. So that's a little lesson in hope, perhaps, but, you know, no speculating. This may well be a 200-year battle ahead of us. I don't know that or not, but
we're with Michelle Francis Stoica in the studio, and it's the Tangerine Dream Team Show, and it's call-in number time. If you'd like to call in, 469-3119 or 427-3772. If you have any kind of comments about what you felt about the season that we just experienced, the Occupy situation, what you think the future will be, or how it affects you. So it's been interesting, all the things you've brought in. And how do you look at what may happen in the Occupy movement, or with, you know, as it refers to what your belief system is?
Well, what do I think is going to happen? I feel like that what happens on this planet, in this plane, is essentially God's party, and that it writes itself to a certain extent. It just depends on how it is written and how strong we are to come to the plate with what will happen. And one of the things I'd like to think about is that, you know, perhaps when Jesus came to Earth, there were apparently a lot of pretty bad people then, and maybe 10% or something of the people were conscious and could listen to his message of love and peace and brotherhood, and the rest really couldn't. And if we are up to 99% of the people willing to listen to that message of love and peace and sharing and caring, and we're down to only having 1% that can't figure that out, then we may be doing really good, at least mathematically. It would appear so. So that's really positive. You know, I think about a lot of things. I think about, you know, the concepts of the dawning of the age of Aquarius and some of the prophecies, and you know, I'm no one really to speak on that behalf, but I, you know, something is afoot here that's, I think, pretty huge, and may be larger than just what it looks like on the planet Earth from a material perspective. So I guess we'll just have to see.
And do you mean the astrological version of the Aquarius dawning?
I think both. So I think that in my reality, I think that, like many people, that there's more than one planes of existence. You have the material plane, and it is doing what it is doing. And oddly enough, on the spiritual plane, things are happening, and they are sometimes they look very bad from one side, you know, from the earth plane, and but they may be very powerful things spiritually. And I think we're evolving. There's a lot of theories on that. I think that probably to answer that question best, I'd like to read a little bit from Matthew.
All right.
And this is just Jesus' teaching. And it's just called, "You're Blessed." Jesus says, "You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and His rule. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more, no less. That's the moment when you find yourself proud owners of everything that can't be bought. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. You're blessed when you care. At the moment of being careful, you find yourself cared for. You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind, and your heart put right. Then you can see God in the outside world. You're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. That's when you discover who you really are and your place in God's family. You're blessed when your commitment to God provokes persecution. The persecution drives you deeper into God's kingdom. Not only that, count yourself blessed every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close for comfort and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens. Give a cheer even. For though they don't like it, I do. And all heaven applauds. And know that you are in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble." And I think when I read that, of course I see Occupy 100 times over in that, and I do believe inside my heart that they're some of the most Christ-like people walking around, although there's a lot of Christ-like people walking the world right now, but I see that their intent is to be Christ-like, to be good.
And do you want me to give you any kind of other attitudes, or do you think that from what you've seen, or is what you've read enough for you? Because some people wonder about Occupy's intent and their direction and why they can't come to a, you know, one goal in mind, and that's the criticism. Mm-hmm. Does that bother you at all?
No, it does not. When I first started going to the GAs and I heard someone say democracy is a messy process, I got that because I'm a mother and a teacher and I do art. All those things have been very messy in the past, you know, you learn something. But what I realized is that inside of a GA, a General Assembly, if it takes three stacks or three tries for someone to be able to see clearly through their fears or their ego or some sort of filter that doesn't allow them to see clearly, it's worth it, and the people take the time. And I think, for me, that's the important part. Are we going to get this right? I mean, Occupy is not going to change the world in a year. That's not going to happen. It's a process of evolution and growth. And inside of that evolution and growth, we need to learn how to be patient with one another. We need to learn how to listen to one another and listen deep enough to help each other see all sides of something so that we're making good decisions as a group of people versus, you know, just a few making decisions for the many. That's what doesn't work for me. you know, I think that all voices are equally important. You know, it's not like God went around and just put souls in some people. You know, we've all got them. And in my belief system, we've also got guides and angels around us that if we don't know what we're doing, we can always ask them. But through connecting with the people, you know, that's really where you're face-to-face with God. And in an assembly, you're face-to-face with that. At least that's what happens in my heart.
And what does that do for you, Mr. Mitchell?
Oh, my goodness. Do we even have a mic check?
Yeah, yeah.
I think we've just heard an amazing commentary by an elder with much wisdom to share. You would hope that we have some youth listening that might be able to call in.
Yeah, each of us represents a different generation, and all three of us. So to speak.
Especially these days, the Bible seems pretty popular. So there are some passages that you read that are also global in stature. It's great how you reach out for some Asian wisdom there. I guess I would have a friendly, kind of like a friendly amendment, but a friendly disagreement. You said it's too much to ask Occupy to change the world in 1 year, and I think it already has. just the fact that everyone knows pretty much now in common speech and in the media what 99% even refers to, I would say, is a basis for basically supporting the general thrust of your arguments, which is that maybe we have, over the last 2,000 years, made some strides in mass consciousness. I think the last year witnessing this kind of peaceful demonstrations is a reminder that we have had greats like Mahatma Gandhi that apparently maybe in the mass consciousness we can basically still remember enough of such a big soul's example. Did Gandhi come to your mind at all over the past weeks or months? Do you have any?
Yes. And it was an interesting thing that in my 30s, I can remember watching the movie about Gandhi, in which the story about when they were told by the Brits that they had to have tax on salt, and it really hurt the people financially. So Gandhi says, well, let's just walk to the ocean and go get our own salt. So they walked all the way across India. And when they got to the ocean, the military was there, and they said, you cannot go get salt. And they said, well, we're going to do it anyway. And they knew what was going to happen. And the first men stepped forward, and of course, the military smacked them on their heads, hit them in their heads, and they collapsed. And they had it organized so that there were people alongside that pulled the wounded men out of the way. And then the next four stepped up, and the next four, and the next four. And the BBC broadcasting says, and it went on and on and on all day until the military no longer had the strength to continue beating on these people. And I realized that at that time of my life, I thought, what kind of people could do that, that could be so selfless, you know, and expose themselves to such kind of brutality? What kind of souls could do this? And then when I saw New York, I knew. And so I was down at a GA, and I told them that story. And then I told them that, at least from my perspective, for me, that Occupy was those people. Yeah, and how honored I felt to even be standing there saying that, you know, after what people had been willing to go through for the sake of the betterment of our world. Thanks for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm. What I was talking about before was Michelle is a person who lived with Vietnam War. I was a wannabe hippie. I was like the tail end of that. And then Mitchell here, he was born about the time of the war. So that's really a vague way to say that we span a couple of generations. So I've seen Occupy in different ways. I really embrace it, and also saw some disenchantment. And I think part of it is because there's two groups. There's a group that did want to work together, and there was a group that did not even know what was going on with the other group. So the fusion of that was what I would hope could happen, where everybody was physically sharing the same area, maybe not all at the same time, but kind of have a consciousness about that. That the time and space is reality together, that they all needed to recognize each other and take responsibility at similar times, or help one another to learn how to cooperate and work together more. And there was a little bit of meeting orientation where maybe the people that weren't coming to meetings needed to be aware that there were meetings that they could participate in, even if they felt incapable or unable. Maybe they needed to have some kind of either encouragement or admonition or some kind of like consequence. And that's what I wasn't able to reconcile, whether there was supposed to be any fault-finding or any kind of corrections, or if it was just everything's good the way it is, because some things were good and some things needed balanced. So that's what I'm thinking right now.
Well, I would certainly say that from the majority of the stories I've heard and accounts of participants is that there's plenty of room for improvement. So I would be extremely surprised if somehow next year was completely devoid of any continuity. It might take a calamity from Gaia trying to spare us maybe a long period of suffering. Maybe she has some catastrophe in store that would just possibly at any moment a small asteroid could just go beyond even a multi-year famine that would have an enormous effect on global population, or even just a pandemic flu next year. That's easily in the cards from recent headlines in the last few weeks because of a bioengineered version of a common flu. There's recent proof now that we could have an extremely bad pandemic next year, even without looking at interplanetary factors, including the planet Venus crossing the solar disk next year in June. And of course, Venus in the Mayan calendar was seen as a source of war. And it's not clear that we have gotten to the bottom of intercultural, multicultural interpretations, even just of the stars above.
Mitchell, you've been a scientist on that researching end of getting all that kind of thing going, where people have their ideas about pandemics and all. And I've watched pandemic here, pandemic there, and none of them have surmounted to much. So what is it that about all the scientists, and who is it that's really who's really announcing this, these kinds of scare tactics? Anybody?
Well, scientists themselves, when they're allowed to speak freely,
which is a very difficult condition to achieve.
Yeah, at this point, because so many things nobody hears about. I mean, that's indie media is probably saving us because people are not hearing about things. And, of course, the understanding that we're at the end of an age, according to the Maya and the Aztec calendar, would probably be indicative of the fact that the universe itself has seasons. And just like when winter comes, things change. And when summer comes, things change. We are in a changing time right now. And there are many things that are indicative of that. The lining up of a new number of planets on one side of the universe, which, you know, even a first-year physics students would look at that and think to themselves, the magnetic pole is going to be, you know, there's going to be something happening there, and solar activity that. I think that we just need to expect it. That all of this is going to be happening all at the same time. That we're in for one pretty wild ride for a while now, and. You know, I don't know. I was very, very interested for a long time in Atlantis, and I'm trying to get a children's book together on that. And one of the stories that Edgar Cayce tells was that how in Atlantis that they dug too deep. They were drilling too deep using high-powered crystals, and they essentially caused a part of their own doom. That wasn't the only thing. There was the asteroid, too, because there were three times that Atlantis broke up. But I just know that in reading about off of Indie Media about Japan last night, that they were talking about where all that, and excuse me because I'm not a scientist here, but where all that meltdown is going. And they could see it for a while on the surface, and then all of a sudden it started they couldn't figure out where it was. And now the scientists are saying it's burning its way down through the Earth skin. That's the best word I could use, which means, of course, if it hits magma, heaven knows what's going to happen there. But it's interesting that the parallels between Atlantis and what's going on now seem important to pay attention to, like that, okay, so we're going to go through this door again, and how did we go through it the first time? And according to Edgar Cayce, he said that there were two groups of people in Atlantis, those that called themselves the children of the law of one, and then another group that was really into power and technology that really wouldn't listen to reason. So it's just interesting, although I don't know the truth of all this, I just know that it's interesting that Cayce and others, Donnelly, have said things about this, and that here we are going through what looks like a repeat program or a repeat pattern. And I think, once again, it's going to matter how we go through it, you know? What do you think?
Well, I just couldn't help but go back to World War II and look at how modern so-called civilization has handled nuclear power. When we just had the amazing calamity in Japan this earlier this year, whose anniversary is coming up in just a few weeks. If we just look at nuclear power, there's serious questions about how, from the perspective you mentioned, we seem to be still struggling with the same challenges to civilization. And there are also a large number of civilizations whose sudden extinction is still somewhat of a mystery. And even the grand extinctions on the planet leave many open questions. And some think there seems to be a consensus amongst some of the world's scientists that the current mass extinction in progress is a suitable occasion for declaring an end of a geological era known as the Cenozoic right now. Of course, some people like Walter Cronkite say that the only important thing that's happened recently was Neil Armstrong walking on the moon, and that that's one of the few landmarks that might survive into the future memory of whatever species are left alive if we're somehow not lucky. But Coral reminds us that there are scientists and others that are eloquent on some of these questions, and this could be the subject for future shows on 101.3 radio in Santa Cruz.
And you can try to ask yourself, do you want to talk about these things and get your voice heard by applying to be a DJ here? Because we need more people, we need more input, we need your help, and if you come to 2 meetings a month, then your dues are less, and all the details if you call up or write or go to the website. And that's at freakradio.org, and you can PayPal us and send us some kind of encouragement to P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz 95061. Free Radio Santa Cruz, on the air since 1995. We've had a couple of fundraisers and successfully raised over $300 out on Pacific Avenue. So if you ever see a table out there, please stop by. We have a few t-shirts remaining, and you might want to wear one, and our guest is sporting hers.
There was also a rumor there might be a new t-shirt design contest.
Yes, if you have an idea, if you have an idea for a shirt, that'd be great. If you have an idea where we also could remove our studio, that would be an interesting possibility too. So we have about 10 minutes left in the show, and I want to know if there's really some things to stress more than others, or if anyone would like to call in right now, it'd be a good time. But that's okay, because we're not holding, we don't always have callers, and this is the end of the year, and we hope that you're reflecting on a lot of things in your lives, so you can always send your comments to Free Radio, freakradio.org, 101.3 FM, and our call-in number again is 427-3772. I'm here with Michelle Francis Stoica and Mr. Mitchell. I'm Coral Reef.
Okay, I'll throw another one in. I was listening to one of the Hopi elders talk about the prophecies of the Hopi, and at one point I said to catch myself, because I thought, I can't believe he just said that. But I wrote down the line of what he said in the middle of all the catastrophes. He says some of it could be good.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's where I think Occupy for me is at this point. It's really the eye in the middle of the hurricane. And, you know, I don't see that it should all be bad. But, yes, you know, it's going to be a wild ride, I imagine. Mm-hmm. But my eyes are, I think that my eyes are just fixed on the point that that I really keep getting more grateful for people and for my experience of people and for people standing up for truth and justice and their brothers and sisters. And I can't imagine a God not loving us for that, and that we actually are the good people that we were made to be. We just have forgotten part of it. And so I would just like to say this. I kind of had this vision artistically in my mind, and it was a picture of a pyramid. And in the vision, the people from Occupy were all standing underneath, and they were tipping the pyramid so that it was off balance. And the little 1% on the top were falling, kind of like that tarot card, the tower. They had fallen from the tower. So the Occupy people have tipped the pyramid, and it's knocked the 1% off, except that on the other side is a whole group of people from Occupy, and they've got a safety net, and they, and on the safety net is written the word love, so that when the people from the top fall, that there are people down there ready to catch them. And I just think that's the vision I want. That's how I want to see this through. And I'm just feeling very blessed that I had a chance, or have had the chance, to be a part of this great movement, and at the same time feel the spirit within it.
Yeah, me too. There are different ways that the local external factors could be addressed if we wanted to be more communicative with the city, or go off on our own. I mean, that needs to be decided. And it can also be an internal Occupy. I mean, it's stirred up a lot of changes, and change begins at home, and your home is yourself. So. Occupy your own life.
Well, I think Drake brought up earlier that one of the successful things about Santa Cruz Occupy, you know, because it has done some amazing things while it's been here, has to do with the foreclosures. And maybe you'd like to speak a little bit about that, about some of the things that you've seen that are, you know, definitely points to be made in favor of what Occupy has been able to contribute.
Well, I suppose I could start by saying that Rolling Stone seems to be close to the only entity in the main sewer media, or the lamestream media, however you like to see it, that had their eyes open and were willing to do what they claim to do, which is journalism, because we have plenty of so-called journalists, even senior journalists, that apparently have felt comfortable not feeling a need to perform their professed profession when it came to Occupy, but to the degree that we're suffering what Germany went through earlier last century, with a phase of corporate fascism turned against the people through the co-option of the media. It might take going back to Hemingway for a constructive perspective on where Occupy could grow and expand and consolidate its major achievements this year, because only fools would fail to recognize the major achievements that Occupy achieved this year. And one very simple example would be to look at the facts and see what an amazing alliance and support was offered to everyone that's been victimized by the megabanks. There are large numbers of public servants that are familiar primarily with the financial issues raised by Occupy, such as treasurers, maybe even some senior leadership at the public level. But it's quite clear that anyone that has had a long series of complaints or grievances with the so-called banking system now have an enormous amount of support as they move into next year. So even though it seems to be a situation where we're going to have considerable economic turbulence all the way through 2015, what's different now is that the people that have been victimized by the banksters, as they've been exposed as, banksters.com, I believe, would be another successful point in the cyber sphere. So next year, at least, misery will have company. And
and some support.
And then your mainstream media pundits will try to compare 2012 to 1968, and that becomes a whole separate brouhaha. But I think we can let it rest there, although there will be also some interesting, potentially interesting judicial opinions. For example, a federal judge on the West Coast is expected to rule January 3rd, and it's a very simple prediction that your legal students and pre-law types will be quite interested in that judge's previous decisions, so that we can expect pretty quick informed opinion on January 3rd or 4th about at least one judicial opinion that bears on the long list of grievances against tyranny that have accumulated at so many levels of government. And we can also expect some news from Melbourne, Australia, as they have joined in their judicial case with a new standard for international human rights that even Santa Cruz, which has had claimed to progressive leadership for many years, even Santa Cruz has not yet used in its cases in the so-called justice system, has not used the latest armaments in the human rights arena that include, well, let's just say we'll find out from down under.
All right.
So I want to ask if there's any like last words you have. I wanted to say that although I thought Occupy at first was about Wall Street and all the people that were suffering in New York, it was amazing how fast it spread across the country and the world. And I guess we took our tips from the people in Europe and in the Middle East from the Arab Spring, and that young people were the leaders of this, and they want to lead, but they also want some guidance, and so that it's good that
the elders
did, yes, elders that wanted to be out there because they felt that they owed the generation that is left with all the economic and environmental disasters be given some kind of support and just sign of, you know, guidance and love. Even though it may help, it may just be, you know, what they can do. We don't know what's really turning the wheels. We kind of have this idea that it's a bunch of different ways that could be, yeah, the whole world could be operating behind the scenes. But if you want to really go the full gamut, we know that it's the great mystery that's going to decide everything.
God's party.
Yeah. So if we could have the party that would win, I guess that would be it.
At least, if nothing else, choose where you want to sit. Or stand, in this case. Take your stand.
Okay.
And just in case people aren't aware of it, the National Nurses Association, which is known as a union, declared their support for Professor Tobin's Tobin tax proposal, which dates back to at least the 1980s, and their solidarity with the 99% people that would choose to ignore or dismiss that fact, I guess, are free to join the lemmings.
The lemmings. Shall I end it with the song that you selected?
Oh, yeah.
At least part of it.
I should at least announce that that's from the late Beatnik era, a kind of a tongue-in-cheek song about Jesus, but beautiful.
Well, let's see how this quality goes. Okay, and thanks for listening to the Tangerine Dream Tea.
Thanks for having us.
Jesus was a friend of John. Jesus was a friend of Paul.
Stay tuned. There's going to be the Small World Radio coming up after a few announcements. This is 101.3.
To recognize one's own insanity is, of course, the arising of sanity.
Mother Mary, come to me.
We know that this contamination is affecting all of our life, all over our Mother Earth. We know that the cancer rate has gone up to epidemic proportions. Because of the fallout in the air, in the atmosphere, in the water.
It's a small world.
Tune in to Small World Radio. Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m.
It's a small world.
And from the cream to the dregs. From the cream to the dregs. From the cream to the dregs. It's every Thursday night from 8 to 11. From the cream to the dregs. Check it out. It's old time music, new time music. It's mostly fun, and it's just for you right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. The free radio station.
Take this, brother. May it serve you well.
I'm Jerry McLaughlin reporting for Clean TV News with a story that's breaking from the Arctic Circle.